Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia, on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network, in conjunction with Swick Enterprises. We're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We're covering 140-plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. At this time, I'd like to introduce a special guest co-host. He is the Director of Art and Illustration for Gridiron Greats Magazine, illustrating in many different publications over the years. He's also a writer for Gridiron Greats Magazine. Hailing from Colorado, I'd like to introduce my good friend, Jared Kruss. Jared, welcome to the show this evening.
Thanks for having me, Captain. It's good to be back.
I'd like to tell our audience today that we're doing a somewhat different show. Our show today is only going to be for 30 minutes. We're going to spend the entire show as a tribute to a gentleman who was a great supporter and friend of Gridiron Greats Magazine, an iconic player and coach in the NFL and the CFL, and also at his alma mater. I'd like to begin our discussion with about the life of Forrest Gregg. Gregg was unique. He was a team player. If there ever was a team player, he was a phenomenal coach, in my opinion, who really impacted many, many players' lives over the years. He was one of my childhood heroes. Many of my heroes are now long gone from the 60s. But I distinctly remember his phenomenal play with the glory years of the Green Bay Packers. I was kind of shocked when he went to play with the Dallas Cowboys for that one season, but then again, I wasn't, realizing the Green Bay dynasty was over and wasn't going to be back for a long time. And I was always fascinated when he went into coaching because I was very, very much following the Cincinnati Bengals of the early 1980s under this former Packer great Forrest Gregg. And I found great, great comfort knowing that Forrest Gregg was going to become the Green Bay Packers coach in 1984, unfortunately not doing what he needed to do with the Packers, but laying the foundation for the future of their reinvigoration of their glory years back in the 1990s. Forrest Gregg started out as an offensive tackle, well-known numbers number 75 and number 79. He was huge, 6 feet, 4 inches, playing weight of roughly 250 pounds, not deviating from that much season to season. And again, as I say, he was very much a team player. He was very much an individual who played his heart out and coached his heart out for the Packers, for the Bengals, and the various positions he had in the CFL, from the Argonauts to the Shreveport Pirates, the failed U.S. expansion of the CFL, and then ending up in an advisory role as the seasons went on with, I believe it was it'll come back to me, with regard, I'm checking my notes here, right after Ottawa, with the Ottawa Renegades. And again, his great try with SMU and taking over a program that was written off completely. What a great guy, what a great career. And I'm going to hand off to Jared, and I know you know the family. You've had many conversations with Mr. Gregg. What do you think, and just to put you on the spot for a second, what do you think his greatest accomplishment might have been in his playing career and then in his coaching career?
Wow. This didn't go with my notes, Bob. I think the quote from Coach Lombardi is going to pretty much sum up his playing career, and that, of course, was the finest player I ever coached was Forrest Gregg. And when you consider just that, you know, who's endorsing him at that point, and whose name's on the trophy, by the way, and you consider all the players, whether it was with New York or whether it was, you know, the 11 Hall of Famers that you had with Green Bay or it was with Washington, you know, where Sam Huff was and Sonny Jurgensen, and you consider all these guys that Coach Lombardi had under his tutelage one time or another, and to single out Forrest Gregg and say, this is the finest player I ever had. That, before I was introduced to Coach Gregg and before I had the opportunity to interview him the first time, I had done a little bit of background information. I didn't want to go in blind and you know, ask stupid questions, or I figured it, you know, it was going to only be a one-time shot, so I better make it good. And I'd read that quote and, you know, throughout our time together, and it was over 5 years, and I was able to actually spend quite a considerable amount of time with him. It never left that, you know, it was Coach Lombardi who said, this is the finest player I ever coached. And so, you know, I'd asked him in the first interview, you know, I was like, Coach, you know, that's an incredible endorsement. Is you know, he then went on to coach James Lofton and Ozzie Newsome and Brian Sipe and Ken Anderson and Anthony Munoz and, you know, all these other guys that were very, very good Hall of Fame football or Hall of Fame type football players. And I asked him, you know, is there anybody that you would give that endorsement to? And he said, and Ken Riley. And I had never even heard of Ken Riley. So, you know, I wrote that down and then did some research, and he followed up. So, you know, all those guys were good too, but I want him included in that conversation. And I happened to be down in Winter Haven, Florida at the time, and Ken Riley, Coach Riley, was in Bartow, which was about 15 miles away, and was able to track him down, you know, and we did an interview for him. I guess it was an interesting dynamic, being that Coach Riley was a black man from South and you know, Coach Gregg was a white man from Texas, and how that they, you know, got together in Cincinnati and the tutelage and the admiration that each shared for the other. And you know, Coach Riley went on to have a great career at Florida A&M. The dynamic of their relationship, I always thought was very, very interesting, and just the amount of respect. And as I got to know Coach Gregg and then, you know, had a brief amount of time with Coach Riley, men cut from the same cloth. And, Christian men that understood that football was a platform to do their life's work, and it wasn't their work. It was a tough week last week. I lost a friend and we laid him to rest, and you know, you had reached out, and Spano and a number of my friends and these, you know, people call, hey, I'm really sorry to hear. I went out and read stuff online and watched ESPN and all these kinds of things. And they talked about, we'll talk about the rest of his career, you know, 6 championships. And not too many guys can sport 6 championship rings. Brady being one who just got his 6th, and Fuzzy Thurston had one with the Colts before the 5 with the Packers. And I believe it was Coach Gregg, and I think Herb Adderley wound up with Dallas that same year and won. And that's it. Right. In the history of the history of the league, we've got four guys that have won six championships. And to accomplish that as a player, obviously 55,000 men have played football in the 100 years that it's existed, and we've got four guys that have won six championships. And that, you talk about his playing career, and that's pretty special. And
Exactly. It's an incredible accomplishment, which I think today of instant information and instant gratification, it's kind of lost in the game itself. What those guys did, I don't think it ever could be duplicated, in all seriousness. Again, we have Tom Brady as an example today, but in no way, shape, or form it follows what those guys did in such a short period of time. Right. Given the game the way it was at that time. So,
well, and something that I want to bring up is I was listening to Tom Jackson on ESPN, and he was describing careers, and I think this may put it into a little bit of perspective, that he said, if you make it to the NFL, you're a good player. You're good. Mm-hmm. You make it to the NFL. And he goes, a small percentage of those guys will be like Pro Bowl players. And he says, and then a small percentage of those guys will be all pros. And a smaller percentage of those all pros will make it to the Hall of Fame. And he said, then when you get in the Hall of Fame, there's a very small percentage of guys who had legendary careers. And that never left me when I was, considering being in his presence and being around Coach Greg, and that he had a legendary career. And I'll explain what I mean by that. When you look at that Packer team, and I think they're either 9 or 10 Hall of Famers from it. Kramer just made it in. And Willie Davis and, Hornigan, Taylor, and Starr, and the list goes on and on and on. And when you look at individually, nobody says Bart Starr's, and I know this is going to pull at your heartstrings, but nobody says that Bart Starr's the greatest quarterback of all time anymore. Nobody says Taylor are even in the discussion of the greatest running backs of all time. But when you talk about offensive tackle and you look at all time, and yeah, you got Anthony Munoz out there and Larry Allen, and Force Greg is still in that discussion. I think he always will be. And then on the defensive side, it's Ray Nitschke. So of those 9 guys that are in the Hall of Fame, you got 2 guys that will always be in the discussion of the greatest players ever at their position. And those guys are legendary. And something that was really cool, as I got to know Coach Greg, I had spent several hours with him at their home over various days. And I had called him when Super Bowl 50 was getting ready to happen. And that was when Denver played Carolina. And I just asked him, would it be possible for me, I was living in Florida at the time, would it be possible for me to come out and watch the game with you? And they're like, yeah, we'd love to have you. And so it's Coach Greg and his wife Barbara, who's amazing, and me. And it's not a party. My sister was having a party, and there's a chili cook-off, and the games, and all this other stuff. Oh, and there happened to be a football game going. It was the 3 of us sitting there eating sandwich, watching football. And leading up to that week, they named the 50th anniversary all-time Super Bowl team. This is the team's got Joe Montana and Brady and Emmitt Smith and Jerry Rice and these guys. And the only player that represented any of the players from the 60s was at right tackle, was number 75, yep. Played for the Packers. He was the only one. And those guys, and they're still competitive. They kept in touch. And the other guys that they knew that Coach Greg made that team, and when they introduced the players, or prior to the game, they showed the 50 living MVPs, former MVPs, and Coach had just turned it on. He was kind of standing there. Was Bart Starr? He's, oh, there's Bart, were those kind of surreal moments when they're, oh yeah, we just talked to Bart and Sherry the other day, and you realize they're talking about Bart Starr. Or, oh, Jim, right. You know, his wife. And, you know, they're talking about Jim Taylor. And it's just kind of surreal because they're almost like superheroes or you know, that you're talking, they're talking about, you know, they're just friends and they're guys. And, you know, I know that you and I have a history that goes back a long, long ways. And I knew the Packers were your team. My buddy Leland, the Packers were his team. And you know, I understood Force Gregg's place in the history of the organization and that organization's history and the, you know, what it means that Packer team is meant to the development of the league. And it never left me that you're so fortunate to be here in the presence of this legendary player. And people that didn't understand football, I was trying to explain, I said, you know, it's like an artist being able to hang out with Rembrandt or a musician getting to be around Beethoven. I said, you know, I have this limited opportunity to be around greatness at a discipline that I really enjoy and admire. And I said, I will soak up every, you know, any time I can be in his presence, I relish the opportunity to do so. So,
yep.
Yeah, legendary career. And you know, I tried to ask intelligent questions when I was around. And once I kind of was accepted that, you know, Jared's not here asking for us to sign stuff and that was one of the cool things was that I met him the first time I took my son and, you know, he was 12 and didn't want to be anywhere near what his dad was doing, but it was, you know, just one of these, I'm thinking, man, we've got this opportunity and I want you to be a part. There's nobody that I want to share this with more than my son. And, you know, that was the first time I met him and they included him in the conversation and we're sitting in their living room and he put his feet up on their coffee table and I about died. I'm like, oh, get your feet down, you know. And they didn't bat an eyelash and coach was like, no, I think we can make an end out of him. We have a beautiful home they have and kind of as we were leaving, they had a staircase that goes up and then turned back on itself, kind of made it a switchback and then up into the upstairs level. And in that staircase, there was a niche cut out of the wall and that's where his Hall of Fame bus was. And so we were leaving. I was like, can I look at that? And oh yeah, please. And so Adam, my son and I went over and I was trying to explain to him. I was like, okay, well, you know who Tony Hawk is, the skateboarder. And of course he knows Tony Hawk. And I was like, okay, so Coach Gregg is the equivalent of Tony Hawk in football. And then he starts in, oh, so he was, like, really good. yeah, buddy, he was like, pretty good. So. But, you know, just a legendary football player and such an even better man. That was kind of the thing that I wanted to say to people, and as the week passed, you know, after he passed, I'm getting texts and from you and my you know, all my other friends, and that was my answer. It's like, yeah, he was a legendary football player, but he was an even better man. And I asked him tons of questions about guys, you know, and the worst thing he ever said about anybody was he was a good player. was just that kind of high quality man, and I was very, very fortunate to be able to spend the amount of time around him that I did.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I want to just make a couple of comments regarding his coaching career. Mm-hmm. He was a very good coach also, even though his record may have not shown in several places. But the one thing that I think a lot of people don't remember, he took the Bengals to the Super Bowl and literally almost turned over that game and won that game. And it was a very, very strong accomplishment, in my opinion, with what he did with that team. And even more importantly, what he did when he took over a program at SMU, Southern Methodist University, that no other coach basically in the country would touch. And when he got in there realizing that he had basically had all freshmen, and he was bigger than most of the people, most of his players, he knew he had his work cut out for him. And I give him all the credit in the world for what he did in those 2 years at SMU. I was always fascinated with him taking it over. And at that time, believe it or not, I was filling in on a there was a college football show podcast, and I would be talking about, I would always bring up SMU and what Forrest Gregg did that year, and then his two victories the first season was just incredible.
You know, the friend of mine who was the PA that was the original link between Coach Gregg and me, and I had this conversation, exact conversation, you know, the day that we laid him to rest. And yes, he had taken over 6-10 Bengals team, and 2 years later has got him in the Super Bowl. And then, you know, when you have a team that's that quality, now, first of all, they were in the AFC Central, so you've got a good, you know, Houston team, you've got a pretty solid, just out of their championship years, Pittsburgh team, and you've got to compete, and not only did you compete, but you go to the Super Bowl. Now, remember, that was the Freezer Bowl, was that AFC Championship,
right,
where it was like negative 46 degrees or something, so
right,
you know, he comes out,
right,
comes out of the Ice Bowl, which was the coldest game on record, to coach in the coldest game on record,
yeah,
in the Freezer Bowl, and take that team to the Super Bowl, and then, you know, the Packers call after, you know, Bart Starr hadn't been as successful as they wanted him to be as a head coach. And so they call him, and Coach Gregg leaves the Bengals for the Packers and you know, has several years there. And then, yes, SMU calls. And like you said, when you consider that he is one of 28 guys in the world that have a head coaching job in the NFL, probably your dream job, you're back with the Packers, you're following in Lombardi's shoes, and you leave that for like you said, a team that lost all its scholarships, doesn't have any 5-star athletes, doesn't have any 4-star athletes, and is expected to compete in a tough conference.
Yep,
that in
yep,
itself,
yep.
I think, is the mark of the man's passion. And you know, I'll be honest with you, I think that he was more proud of those guys at SMU for those 2 years. I think he's more proud of the 3 wins that those guys had than all the Super Bowls and all the All-Pro and all the things that he did in his playing career. I truly believe he's more proud of the accomplishment he had at SMU than he is of all that other stuff. So it's he was just a special guy. And here will be a kind of a telling mark, was that at his funeral, James Lofton spoke, David Baker from the Hall of Fame spoke, and then one of his players mm-hmm. from SMU spoke. Now, the team, those guys were all pallbearers, along with Ken Riley and Ken Bowman, and there were about 25 guys that had played at SMU that attended the service. And, you know, the one gentleman got up and spoke, and he just talked about his intensity. James Lofton said, you knew when he walked in the room that was somebody. Said his mm-hmm. intensity was infectious, and we all knew who that was. And it was the same no matter who was speaking. They talked about how intense he was. But beyond that, talked about how compassionate he was and how much he loved his job, how much he loved the players around him. And so this particular player shared a story. He said, you know, we were getting ready for Arkansas, and it's a cold, miserable day in Dallas. It's 30 degrees, and we're outside. We're not hitting. We're just doing walkthroughs. It's cold, and he's got us out there. And he's like, man, we're freezing, and we're hating it. And he said, He said, I'm like 5'8", and so we have our second water break, and the rest of the guys said, hey, you need to go ask him if we can go in. And he looked around, and he said, yeah, we're going through goal line situations, and I'm the smallest guy on the team, and I know that if I'm in the game on a goal line situation, things have really gone wrong for SMU. And so he says, I get nominated to go talk to Coach Gregg and say, hey, can we get in practice? And he said, so I start, he's out at the 50-yard line, we're getting our water break, and he says, I start running out there, and he said, I get partway, and I hear the voice of John Fukunda saying from the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. And he said, as I'm approaching Coach Gregg, I'm thinking about this guy is, you know, he played in the coldest game of record. And so he got out there and he said, "Yes, son, what can I do for you?" And he said, "Coach, I just wanted to know if I could bring you some Gatorade." And he said, no, son, I'm good. And he said, "I turned around and I ran so fast back to the bench, I couldn't believe that I'd actually gone up there and done this." And he said, the thing that he was doing, "Do we need to do that? Do we need to be out there?" No. He said, but he was preparing us for life after football. That some days are not going to be easy. Some days you're going to want to quit. Some days things aren't going to go the way that you think they're going to go. And he's preparing us for those instances that we can't quit. He won't let us quit. And if you start quitting today, the next time it's going to be a little easier to quit. And he said he wouldn't let that fight get out of us. But, you know, like everybody else, he talked not about football, but just what a truly incredible man that Coach Greg was.
Right. Well, we're down to about 4 minutes here, and a couple of wrap-ups one way or the other. I mean, we could talk a couple of days about Forrest Gregg, to say the least. Again, looking back at the man, I think you summarized it very, very eloquently with regards to what he actually did with his players, what he did as a player, what he did as a family man. I just wish another Forrest Gregg could come out of the blue and come out of college and go into the NFL and do the same thing. But I know each player is individual to a time frame. Today's society is dramatically different than it was 50 years ago, so on and so forth. And, you know, some of my final thoughts of Forrest Gregg, I could never believe what he was able to do over the years. And as much as the press criticized him over the years, especially when he took over for Bart Starr at the Packers, and how there was supposed animosity between the two, which to me there never was, I think he did what he felt he needed to do to take over that franchise and try to make it a winner again. And there's nothing wrong with that. And again, he did what he could. But to me, he laid the foundation for the future for the Packers to become a good team. Lindy and Fananti, who basically took over after Forrest, laid a lot of foundations for trying to get the team turned around, so on and so forth. So his legend is in so many different places, with the Packers, with the Bengals, with SMU, with the Canadian Football League, with what he did with Shreveport, trying to get the CFL going in the United States, even though that didn't work. He was in so many different aspects in football. It was just truly, truly an incredible career for an incredible man. I'm sad in a way that he's gone. But again, I take pride in knowing about the man's career, learning more about him through you when you're writing on him. It's just, it makes it really worthwhile. And I think that's one of the more important things about preserving the history of football, so that people like Forrest Gregg are never forgotten, the all the different things that the man did in his career, from being a Super Bowl championship winner to coaching in the Super Bowl, to coaching and taking over a college program, so on and so forth. It's truly amazing. All right, with the last 2 minutes, Jared, I'm going to hand back off to you. Final thoughts about Forrest Gregg.
Okay, well, because of my association with him, I paid a little more attention to the things that Coach Lombardi said, because there was a reason for me to. And so I'm going to leave with this one, and it's a quote from Coach Lombardi that says, "I firmly believe that any man's finest hour, the greatest fulfillment of all he holds dear, is that moment when he's worked his heart out in a good cause and lies exhausted on the field of battle, victorious." I was with Coach Gregg just hours before he passed. He was resting, and I'm talking to Barbara, and she's telling me about all the players that have called, all the players that have texted her, all the people whose lives he touched. And I thought about that quote. Here's Coach, he's resting. He's laying on the field of battle, exhausted. And based on the quotes, the texts, the messages that people were sending, it was not about rings. It was not about all-pro performances. It was not about championships. It wasn't about football. He made me a better man. He made me a better father. He made me the person that I needed to become. I knew that I was seeing a man at his greatest hour, laying on the field of battle, victorious.
That's a great quote. Well, that's a wrap. Horace Gregg, you'll be missed. We'll miss you. May you rest in peace. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.